Time to take a look at climate and weather now with our weather guys, Steve Ackerman, professor and director of the Cooperative Institute for Meteorological Satellite Studies, and John Martin, professor and chair of the Department of Atmospheric and Oceanic Sciences at UW-Madison. And as always, anything relating to weather and climate, these guys know virtually everything there is to know.
So kind.
Virtually.
I have a question for you.
John will know.
Are you doing anything this afternoon? Because my pier has flooded out on my the lake. Actually, we got home from a little trip to Door County where it's been dry.
As a bone.
As a bone, and arrived home to find our pier partially kind of washing away. And so I was in water up to my neck yesterday afternoon late, getting that pier dragged out.
I knew we'd have a story about the lake. And the answer is, I don't know, because we're supposed to have our first fall baseball practice this afternoon, but I don't know about that now.
You're not going to have that.
I don't think so.
Part of my dock is underwater as well, though it's not floating away, fortunately. We live on the mouth of the river, so it's a permanent dock, which keeps it from floating away. But if you find someone to fix your dock, let me know.
I tell you what, it's the water level is up, it's got to be at least 3 feet in Lake Monona. And here I am. Complaining about the pier when there have been so many people who have suffered far worse. What causes this? Was this part of the hurricane? I heard some discussion to that effect that it might have actually been sort of precipitated by the hurricane.
Hurricane Dean. I think it was Tropical Storm or Tropical Depression Erin, which had inundated Texas in the prior week.
Oh.
Was kind of sitting there over the panhandles of Texas and Oklahoma at the same time we were confronted with a circumstance that would lead to regular rainfalls, few inches of rain over a period of days anyway. And then if you can get that tropical moisture in there from Erin, that made all the difference. And yet we really have to say that with some caution. You have to study that in retrospect to figure out if that's actually what happened, but it could very well be the case.
Yeah, and Dean, I think, affected San Diego and Southern California.
Yeah,
brought moisture in there, and they got record precipitations, too.
They did.
Just recently, yesterday or this weekend.
Mm-hmm. And that's as surviving going across the whole country of Mexico, right over the central part of the country.
Let me give the number, by the way, so others can join in, and we don't have to listen to my questions all the time. Here's a 1-800-642-1234. 1-800-642-1234. Or if you're in the Madison area, you can reach us at 263-1890, 263-1890, or email us at talk@wpr.org as we talk climate and weather with our weather guys, Steve Ackerman and John Martin. And really appreciate having them with us. You know, yesterday, I looked at the weather forecast, and it was supposed to be sunny today in southern Wisconsin. And, boy, that's one the weather forecasters missed. How does that sort of thing happen?
That's a good question. And I'm glad you also said at the end of your comment, Larry, that it's one they missed, because I want to make sure I congratulate our professional weather forecasters for the last week. Nobody in the southern part of the state was caught by surprise that it was going to rain every single day. I don't think anyone expected 16 inches of rain. On the other hand, everyone knew it was going to be a soggy week. That was forecasted a week in advance. Fantastic. Today, I agree 100%. Woke up this morning, saw that the sky was a little eerie, read the 3:30 a.m. forecast discussion from Milwaukee Weather Service, and I don't know what was actually occurring at 3:30 further to our west, but there was almost no mention at all of a significant rain threat today. So this thing just popped up, as many times in the summertime weather systems do, live and die in a few hours, and you can therefore get caught unaware that it's on the way. And I think that's what happened today after a sterling week.
Yeah,
it's a tough morning.
It's really bad to kind of end on a note like that, because, you know, that's what we tend to remember, right? We remember that we didn't bring our umbrella today, you know, and I got drenched because nobody forecasted it. But as John was pointing out, they've done a remarkable job on doing this. And forecasting precipitation, particularly amounts, is really hard in the summertime because these convective cells can be so isolated, although the one that just drenched us is pretty big.
It's big.
It's big and covering a lot of the state. But, you know, as I think about the state, what are we about, 370 miles or so from tip to bottom? Mm-hmm. It's not a long area in the scheme of things, but we've got drought conditions in some parts.
Yeah.
you know, Door County would love to have had 6 or 8 inches of that rain that southern Wisconsin mm-hmm. got, and there are other parts of the state that would as well.
Yeah. Well, for the month of July, I remember thinking many times, trying to make sure we could get outdoor activities in. If we were just 50 miles south, if we were in the Beloit area, we would have had a rainy July. And because a lot of rain and systems just like we had last week here in Dane County were sliding to our south right at the Illinois-Wisconsin border, and we were missing most of that all July. So, boy, the narrow distribution of precipitation in the summertime is something of great interest.
Amazing. Jeff in Madison, let's give you a chance. Hi, Jeff.
Well, you probably just answered it, but I was just saying we just were camping up in the Sylvania Wilderness in the Upper Peninsula, and where we go every summer, and we could see just a noticeable drop in lake levels. The beaches by Clark Lake, which is the larger lake there, about a three-mile lake, the beaches have probably widened by 100%.
Mm.
And we drive a four-hour drive back to Madison. I'm mopping water out of my basement. Is there any theory as to, I mean, has the jet stream above us changed that precipitously, or?
No, it's just a matter of where it happens to be in a given month. And this month of August, the jet axis was just about between us and, I don't know, Beaver Dam, Wausau, something like that. So we were on the south side of the jet axis, and the Upper Peninsula was on the north side, and that means dry almost always in the summertime. And these things are a couple hundred kilometers or 100 or so miles wide, and if you're on one side of it, you have a vastly different month of weather than you do if you're on the other side of it.
Amazing.
So that's exactly what happened. Nothing extraordinarily unusual, just part of the circumstance that the weather tends to deal to us.
Thanks a lot for calling. Appreciate it. But you said summer is, and that's it's different in the winter for us in terms of our snow and precipitation?
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Yeah, usually in the wintertime, systems are larger and more organized, taking up several states, larger scales. And so it's easier to track them, whereas in convection, even though, it's taken up pretty much this entire southern part of Wisconsin, it's still pretty hard to figure out where they're going to initiate and then where they're going to track.
Yeah, they can sneak up on you in the summer.
Yeah.
Could you imagine this precipitation in January?
Oh, John
how
could.
Much snow?
I could.
There'd be no moving around.
15 inches of rain would be 150 inches of snow, conservatively.
Right, over 10 feet. That's kind of scary.
Yep, 12 feet of snow.
Let's not even think about that. David in Madison. Hi to you.
Hi. I've been curious for a number of years. Are we having more erratic weather, more extremes of weather events and tendencies? And is that caused by pollution that we've thrown up into the atmosphere over the years that doesn't distribute equally but kind of bounces around?
That's a good question. And when you look at long-term predictions, so I'm talking like 50 years from now with, expected changes in temperatures, people are talking about the potential, and I emphasize the word potential, for extreme-type weather conditions, more extreme than recently. But if I think back now, it's really hard to tell whether or not we're actually getting those now. I mean, if you look back to 93, we were flooded then. Extreme temperatures were actually occurring in the 1930s. So it's really, the statistics of extremes are really hard to figure out.
I was thinking if you had all the data, it might show that extremes are more disproportionately recent, but you say that's not true.
Yeah. No one's come out and said that with great confidence, that the extreme events are more frequently occurring in the last 15 years than they were 50 years ago. And there are a few things, though, that don't strike you as extreme, but strike you as nerve-wracking. One of them is the minimum temperature at night, particularly in the wintertime, has risen over the last 10 or 15 years. And that is, in some cases, most people think that as the opposite of an extreme. You don't really bottom out and get those freezing cold temperatures. But that's a harbinger of some things that might be coming. And I don't know how they feed into extreme events. Nobody really does yet.
Yeah. Appreciate it. You guys have really answered my question.
Thanks a lot for calling. Yeah. Appreciate it.
Made our day.
1-800-642-1234, the number to call, or in Madison at 263-1890. Rebecca, your turn. Hi, Rebecca in Madison.
Hello. Hi.
Hi.
I feel kind of silly asking this question. But I saw a recent story on the news about the Chinese government preparing for the upcoming Olympics and saying that they were going to control the weather for the Olympics. And I want to know if their stories about shooting rockets into rain clouds are true, and if anyone around here has tried that, or what they're talking about.
A lot of that weather modification programs were tried in the U.S. in the 40s, 50s, and even into the 60s in the mountain regions. And again, if you look at what the data was doing and the statistics behind it, there was no statistical evidence that it was doing anything. So I'm guessing there's just an error in the translation. Perhaps.
Well, I don't know. The Chinese sometimes come up with some pretty wild claims. They said that in the 70s about earthquake prediction. Remember that?
They
had a prediction for devastating earthquake in 1970 or 74, and then they thought they'd really figured out how to do it, and then they were surprised by several after that. So, yeah.
Well, sort of fits with what I imagined was going on. Thank you very much.
All right. Thanks a lot for calling. Appreciate your call. And Joanne in Dunn County, your turn. Hi, Joanne.
Hi there. It's been exciting living on the border of St. Croix and Dunn County the last week because we're right on that borderline between the dry area and the wet.
Right.
And day after day I'm driving to work and I can look to the south. Reliably, it's black and giant towers of clouds. And up here, we, of course, didn't get anything for the longest time. The corn was curling up and everything. Well, now in the last week, we've finally gotten enough rain. Ours hit at 3:30 this morning, and the lightning was almost nonstop. I've never seen lightning. I got up and unplugged my computer and everything. So we finally got some, but we also had those shear winds. I think it was a 2 or 3 weeks ago on Saturday, where I'd be driving along and there'd be dead trees and popples and everything standing. And then one block later, everything would be blown down. 200-year-old pine trees just snapped right in half.
Wow.
I mean, I'm going to be 50 next year and I've never seen weather like this.
Yeah.
So these were the straight line winds, so all the trees were knocking the same direction.
It must have been. It hit Menominee and it hit New Richmond pretty bad. Barns blew down. I mean, barns that were over 100 years old are flat on the ground. And it wasn't a tornado. It was apparently some kind of straight line wind.
Yeah, wow. Interesting. Those are more common in May and June around here than they are in August. But this whole month has been kind of screwy. So
yeah.
Very
and you get those associated with these type of thunderstorms. It's kind of outflow from these big storms.
Yeah, and we'll talk some more about those straight-line winds and also answer your questions as well with our two weather guys, Steve Ackerman and John Martin, right after we take a look at the news. Stay with us. We're taking a look at climate and weather now with our weather guys from the University of Wisconsin, Steve Ackerman and John Martin, both professors. Glad to have them with us, and certainly join in with your questions if you have one at 1-800-642-1234, in Madison at 263-1890. And before we go to the phones, those straight line, what causes a straight line wind, a wind that is so forceful that it knocks down trees and everything in its path?
They usually occur in when the flow at middle and upper levels of the atmosphere is from the northwest, because that's often a time around here in the summer and spring when the winds are very strong at levels in the middle and upper atmosphere. And when you get a deep convective storm that reaches all the way to the ground, it mixes up a lot of things. It mixes up water vapor. It mixes up pollutants. It also mixes up momentum. So the air has a certain momentum, and it can mix that very high momentum air from up in the top part of the atmosphere right down to the ground.
Oh.
And it doesn't change. It just brings it right down with that speed, and then it hits the ground, and it races off to the southeast and knocks a barn over or knocks a tree over or something like that.
You wouldn't want to be outside in the middle of
those. No, you would not. You don't get any warning if you're out in the middle of nowhere and there's no trees around you. And the warning from trees is they're falling on you. So that isn't, that's not positive.
And they're
either,
making a lot of noise, no matter what the philosophers say.
Yeah, that's right.
Bob in Darlington, it's your turn. Hi, Bob.
Yeah, thanks a lot for taking my call.
Sure.
And I grew up in a state where I saw snow every month of the year. And it's not Alaska.
Ah. Were you in Buffalo, New York?
Well, what elevation?
What elevation? That was my next question. Yeah.
Well, I don't know what the elevation would be, although I'll have to admit that it was quite close to Canada, Manitoba, actually.
Okay.
So maybe you could guess now.
Yeah, Montana. You're in the mountains of western Montana.
No, North Dakota.
Oh, North Dakota.
But 33 miles from the Canadian border. But I even saw snow once that covered the green grass on the 4th of July.
Wow.
When I was in the third or fourth grade.
Holy mackerel.
And what would really cause a phenomenon like that? I know that we're quite, North Dakota's quite northern state, sure. but yet
yeah.
still on the 4th of July.
One of the things that I find really interesting about precipitation in the continental U.S. or in the actually mid-latitudes in general is that nearly all the precipitation that falls on the ground was at one time frozen. So whether or not you get rain is just a matter of whether or not the atmosphere is warm enough and that warm layer is deep enough that the frozen particles will melt. And so the simple answer is that, yeah, those things are always frozen, and it's just that the atmosphere was not warm enough over a deep enough layer to actually measure that snow. Mm. Now, it's also not probably associated with convection. It's probably associated with a mid-latitude cyclone-type storm that for some reason hit the northern regions of the U.S. or the southern regions of Canada. What year was that, roughly?
I'll be 76 years old this winter, so I was...
3/4 of a century ago.
Yeah, that's right. So it really wasn't probably global warming effect. Or,
no, it was just, it probably could happen again in that region.
Yeah, that's right. I mean, it's just part of
the variability. But I saw snow every month and when I was growing up as a young lad, and I left North Dakota when I was 20.
Wow. And for good reason.
Good reason. Yeah.
No, see, I'm envious of that. That's something I can't say, and I'm frustrated now hearing someone else in the continental U.S. can.
Thanks, Bob. Thanks a lot for calling. I'm going to give some others a chance to get in here. Lots of callers online. I appreciate your comment. Betty in Camp Douglas, your turn. Hi, Betty.
Oh, thank you for taking my call. I always love these weather guys. we were, I think, in bed. Early morning when our weather radio came on and we got these, it was the time of the straight line winds with this howling like we were at a kid's horror movie, you know. Wow. And in the newspaper that next day, I saw a headline that said we had had a derecho. And, you know, in a flurry of housekeeping, I threw that newspaper away and didn't read it. So I looked in the dictionary, in my unabridged dictionary, and I could not find a derecho.
Yeah, and it's spelt that way, and I'm glad you spelled it. I'm glad you pronounced it that way, because that's how I pronounce it when I want to spell it. But it's actually called a derecho.
Derecho.
It's called a derecho. Yeah,
how's
even
it
though
spelled?
It doesn't look D-E-R-E-C-H-O.
It's almost like the Spanish word for left.
Derecho.
Or right.
That's what it looks like. Yeah.
Derecho.
Is that like, it is Spanish.
I think it's a Spanish word, but it sure looks like the Spanish word for right, which just ends in the wrong letter.
Okay.
But I don't know if that's where it comes from.
But now, what is it again?
It's very similar. It's like a straight line wind. I put it in a classification of a straight line wind.
Yeah.
But usually it's much more organized. And so you'll see it propagate. There have been derecho events that have started off in Minnesota and just went right across into New York. So they're long lasting because the system kind of feeds itself. And sometimes you'll hear them called bow echoes, too. You'll see in a radar image, it's shaped very much like a bow.
We had one the other day. It was south of us. It was in Chicagoland Friday afternoon.
Yeah. Right.
Good thing, because we would have had trees blown over here after a foot of rain.
Right.
But, they can last a long time. And, again, they're in northwesterly flow. It's consistent with the straight-line wind situation.
Thanks, Betty. Thanks a lot for calling. Appreciate it. Pat in Three Lakes. It's your turn. Hi, Pat.
Hi, how are you? Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
I've lived in northern Wisconsin my whole life except for a few years, and I'm 65 years old, and it seems to me the last 20 years, the droughts are more frequent than they used to be, a lot more frequent. I can remember almost my whole life. My brother worked for the Forest Service when the deer used to yard up, and you'd find, 150, 250 dead deer in the yards because they'd overbrowse the yards. They don't even yard up anymore. They haven't done it for 20 years. So that's an indication to me we don't have the precipitation or the snow in the wintertime that we used to have. Also, it seems, our trout streams are drying up here, and we have big lakes like Anvil Lake in Vilas County that's down maybe 5 feet, and it hasn't ever come back, plus other lakes that have dried up. Is there a dome over, a high-pressure dome or something like that over in northern Wisconsin that's doing this, or is it my imagination?
It's not your imagination,
no,
that's
not,
for sure. Yeah.
No.
I think there's a couple of things. One is the current weather patterns are not precipitating up there. And then also, as you have alluded to, since probably late 1998 or late 1990s anyway, snowfall up in that region has been on average below normal.
Yeah, that's true.
Part of it has been associated with El Nino type patterns coming and going, but in general, we just haven't been getting the snowfall up there that we've had in the past, you know, like in the 70s and 80s for sure.
Yeah. Yeah, and then I think that enhances evaporation out of the ground in the those places in the wintertime of all times. And then it takes more rain to replenish that moisture in the spring and the summer. And if you're even if you're averaging something that's close to average, if you've had a drier and more evaporative winter, you're going to end up feeling some stress from drought. So all those things added together might be what's doing it. Of course, they all beg the question, how come all those circumstances are happening seemingly consistently year after year? And I don't think we have a good answer for that yet.
Yeah.
Unfortunately. Okay. All right. Thanks a lot for calling, Pat. You can join in as well, by the way, at 1-800-642-1234 or in Madison at 263-1890. I have some open lines. We'll get you on pretty fast. Mike in Algoma, your turn. Hi, Mike.
Here's a left field question for you. Has there been any research that has shown a correlation between weather patterns and the formation of the driftless area back in the glacial times?
Hmm.
Oh, so in other words, were there different weather patterns at the time the glaciers receded from the state?
Well, that preceded the glaciers, or I mean during the glacial episodes, so that the driftless area was actually able to form as a non-glaciated area.
There's people who study these things, and some of the outstanding questions that I've heard about, and it's not my field, but I'd like to kind of get into it a little bit, some of the outstanding things are exactly along these lines. There's evidence for extraordinary high wind events in the state of Iowa, for instance, which is just to the southwest of the driftless area. And there's evidence of similar high wind events even in the driftless area itself, and not so much to the east and to the northeast in the, you know, 10, 15, 20,000 year ago time period. And I don't know any more about it than that, but I think there's a lot of questions about what might have been going on with weather patterns in and around that time period in those locations. And they were rather exceptional, not the kind that we get in those places today. And so I don't know the answer to those questions. Nobody does.
Hmm. Interesting.
Thank you.
Thanks, Mike. Thanks for calling. And on to Bob in Blue Mounds, Wisconsin. Hi, Bob.
Hi. I missed the very opening minute of the show, but I wanted to get back to this August weather in southern Wisconsin and the explanation for it, because we broke the all-time record for any month, but we didn't just break it by 10% or 20%. We broke it by, you know, 40% or more.
Yeah, huge.
So I wondered if you could maybe continue to comment on, you know, how, I mean, that's pretty rare for a record that stood for, what, 140 years or something.
Yeah. What
to
was
break
the,
it by
well,
that much.
It was 50 years. We had, I think it was in the summer 1950 or 1957 where we had our record wet month. July, I think, of 1950. But nonetheless, that's splitting hairs.
How much did we get in August?
Well, I don't know what the final tally is today. We got a big shower this morning, and it's probably about over or close to over. So we're probably around 16 inches of rain month so
far. Madison, before this rain, was 14.7 inches.
Yeah, so we're probably getting close to 16.
Right.
And that's way above, as the caller says, way above our prior wettest month of all time, which goes all the way back to 1871, although the record was set in the summer of 1950. August is our wettest month of the year. That's the case. Every year, on average, that's the case, in this part of the state anyway. So that suggests to me that there are some large-scale circumstances that conspire to make it a wet month every year. And if you can add a couple of ingredients that are abnormal to that situation, like Tropical Storm Erin in the near vicinity, perhaps like the parade of cyclones across Hudson Bay that kind of kept frontal boundaries, weak though they were, in our vicinity for much of the first 2 weeks of August. Those are probably relatively unusual circumstances in the context of what happens every August. Add it all together and you get something that's really exceptional. Hmm. And that's what we got.
Yeah.
But that rain in 93, just to go back to that, that was March, wasn't it, or April?
No, that was June and July.
Was
right?
it
when
June and July?
Yeah, when West Des Moines flooded, and that was a summertime event. And it was cold in the Pacific Northwest. I remember that. That was correlated with the heavy rain in the Midwest.
Yeah.
Very cold.
This is also our rainiest summer ever as well.
Yeah.
And
oh,
again,
it is?
In Dane County
or in southern Wisconsin.
Yeah. Yep.
Unbelievable.
Well, we still haven't beaten out Hall, Missouri from 1947, that has the world record for rainfall, apparently, occurred in, Jim Packard is telling me, in Hall, Missouri.
That's in Holt, Missouri. That's the name of the town.
Holt?
Yeah, colleagues of mine did a paper on this case. This was July 1947 or something.
12 inches of rain fell in 42 minutes.
Yeah, yeah.
That's like a bucket of water.
Yeah,
you know?
That's what we had effectively in a week in 42 minutes. That's amazing.
Wow. Where does it go?
I don't think it goes
anywhere. It doesn't go in the ground. It runs
someplace.
There's
another one that's like that. Unionville, Maryland, sometime in 1970. It was the summer of 1970. They had 1.6 inches of rain in 60 seconds.
Holy mackerel.
Can you imagine?
Oh,
yeah,
Phil,
Holt, Missouri.
Phil, well, I'm going to be in Manitowish Waters in a couple of weeks. Phil, hi. Thanks for calling from Manitowish.
Hey. Yeah, how you doing? As a former Illinois resident, I got a couple of quick stories for you. But we always had a buddy and I had a habit of reading the old treatises on Illinois history, and you have to go way back to the libraries to find these things. But there was a time in the reportedly in the 1700s when they actually found men and horses frozen solid. They had no records, of course. They estimated that an Alberta clipper came down, and it blew so hard it blew water out of shallow ponds in the kind of swampy areas down there and froze them into windrows of ice.
Wow.
And they found these horses and men froze solid, and they estimated that, as near as they could guess, that it went from like 30, 35 above to over 40 below in less than an hour with winds of 60, 70 miles an hour.
It's wow, just unbelievable.
Phenomenal thing that can happen once in a while. So kind of batting down the hatches, I guess, huh?
Yeah, that's
right.
Oh,
man.
One of the famous stories about the Armistice Day storm in 1940, which was around here, I think, was people in duck hunting, right?
You remember
right,
that
story?
Duck hunters got stuck.
They froze to death, some of them, and a temperature drop of about 50 degrees in a couple of minutes. Yeah.
Oh, my gosh.
Yeah, so that can happen.
Tim? I had a fellow who was teaching geology with the course one time, and he'd worked in Prudhoe Bay in Alaska when they were setting the big 28-inch surface casing for a couple hundred feet of permafrost. And he said when they got down to the bottom through all that permafrost, they actually turned up green, leafy, fern-type vegetation.
Wow, interesting.
Wow.
So it gotten cold and hurt. Well, leave you guys be. I just want to throw that in.
Yeah, that's interesting.
Thanks a lot for calling. Yeah, the Armistice Day weather or storm is from 1940, I believe. I think
November 10th, 1940. Yeah. We're actually doing a lot of work with folklorists and looking at that. And so there's a lot of interesting things that happened in the upper Midwest and affected a lot of the U.S. And, in fact, it's the same storm that took down the Tacoma Narrow Bridge.
Yeah, that's right. Oh, Galloping Gertie.
Yep. It's that storm that took down the bridge is what hit us and back in November 10th, 1940.
Yeah. Good friend of mine, Tim Isley, has done a lot of research on that. I'm going to have Tim on there. Tim, call in if you've been giving us
Tell us about that storm.
Tell us a little more about that storm. I was always going to have him on the show to talk about it. We never have. And so, Tim,
we actually have an undergraduate student collecting newspapers articles and trying to figure out what was going on.
Oh, he should talk to him, or he or she should talk to Tim Isley, because Tim has collected a lot of information on that particular storm. Well, you know, Madison likes to pride itself in all of its top tens, you know, was the best city and the most bike paths and all this. Mm-hmm. Well, I tell you what, the only Wisconsin city among the top 10 cities in America with the most weather variety is Madison.
Yippee-doo!
There you go.
That's a good thing, right?
Yeah, you bet it is.
It ranked 8th on a list. And now, where would you guess the top ones would be?
For the best city, for best most, varied weather?
Most weather variety.
Des Moines, Iowa.
Nope.
Wow.
I would...
I don't have the whole list in front of me.
I would go in Pennsylvania someplace, because I'm trying to pick up freezing rain along with tornadoes and other stuff like that.
Go south and a little west. Well, let's see. Springfield, Missouri.
Missouri, okay. That
is
would,
first. Yeah. And Topeka, Kansas.
Topeka,
was
Kansas.
A reason to live in Topeka.
Yeah. Well, at least there's one.
Is that right?
Oh, man. Well, what have you guys looked at? What do you think? Is this hurricane business and that going to stop this rain coming pretty soon? Or is it going to be over with, the hurricane business?
We need some sort of change to kind of move the jet stream around.
Yeah, I think we're
what
probably...
What does it take?
A whole big change in the pattern. It's been very stationary across the whole eastern two-thirds of the United States, and that's not actually – that was through Friday. It's not so stationary now. I think this is a weird Monday morning, but I think we're probably out of the main rain threat now.
Which is good because it's been so stagnant. You know, we've been and been getting flooded. And as we were saying, you know, the northern regions of the states are really drought. The southeast is really dry. Mm-hmm. Breaking this pattern would be really a good thing for a variety of weather.
Yeah,
change,
that's right.
Sure.
Yeah. We need some more variety.
Bob in West Dallas, your turn. Hi, Bob.
Hi. I was about a seventh grader in 1940, and I remember very well that day in November, that Armistice Day started out as a foggy morning, and then it turned to a light rain, then a sleet by noon, and then the snow began to do it. And I know that my dad was manager of a telephone company up in New Auburn, and the snow began to freeze on the lines, and it froze on there so that it was probably 4 inches in some, you know, grabbing onto a small wire like this. Lines went down, and then the wind picked up and blew many, many hundreds of poles down. And so we had the rest of the winter to help put the poles back up and get the telephones working again. At the same time, my sister, who was up and going to school in Eau Claire, up in Superior, rather, they were driving down, and they got down about as far as Minong, and they had to take the train from there on down, and they got in about 9 o'clock at night into New Auburn. But it was quite a time, and the snow drifts were very, very high, and it was.
Thanks a lot for calling on that, Bob. I was kind of reminded as you were talking that because it was warm, it was kind of balmy almost in the morning, and so duck hunters went out not really prepared for that kind of weather, and so that's why a lot of them froze and died, and some survived. I know guys who were out on skiffs, there were some that actually had dogs with them, and they got the boats. I know one guy in particular, I remember reading about one fellow who got his boat up onto land and then tipped the boat over and got under the boat with his dog on dry land and hugged his dog and managed to survive. But a lot of people didn't make it.
And that will never happen again. Not the weather event, but the lack of preparation. That will never happen again because numerical forecasting is so much better. There was no such thing as it in 1940. And that's a great revolution, second half of the 20th century. That will never happen again.
Similar storms happened in 75, which broke down the Edmund Fitzgerald.
Yeah.
And then in 98 again. And I don't think anybody died in 98.
That was an incredible event.
Right,
that
and very an well forecasted.
Yeah. And we knew that one was coming.
We knew it was coming.
Thanks, Bob. Appreciate it. Mary in Chippewa Falls, your turn. Hi, Mary.
Hi. See, I want to know, this is an extraordinary event, but it can you die in a thunderstorm by talking on a landline in the telephone or by taking a shower?
I think we've heard this before, and I think the answer in both cases is yes.
Yeah,
isn't that right?
Yep. I mean, if the house gets hit, it can travel. It'll travel around the copper wires in the house and the copper pipes, and that's why the shower is dangerous, is because of the copper pipes that go into the shower, and then of course the water is a good electrical conductor. Mm-hmm. And then the same thing with the phone is that it'll travel through the phone lines. Yeah. Cell phones are okay, but not on landlines.
But not landlines.
Yeah.
Oh,
or PVC plumbing.
So stay out of the shower.
Yes.
It actually occurred to me the other day. I was out digging up some bushes, and I was filthy, and I decided, I'm going to take a shower. And it was during one of these rainy days, and I heard some thunder, and I actually waited a few minutes to let me hear any more thunder. That's a true story.
Outside.
That's just 5 days ago. That's a true story.
You learned something from the show.
Yeah, I thought of the show. I have to tell you. It's absolutely right.
That's not a bad question. Mm-hmm. I'm glad you called. Thank you very much for calling, Mary. Appreciate your call. Boy, I tell you what, the old time really flies, doesn't it?
When you're having fun, and I think the rain stopped, which is even better.
Yeah.
So you guys are predicting that, and this is 100% for sure.
100% for sure.
Are we off the air yet?
Now, hopefully, the way it looks, things are starting to move a little bit. So at least for southern Wisconsin, hopefully the rain will be over for a little while.
I think we're done. Yeah. I think we're largely done. I mean, it's going to get a little warmer as the week goes on, and so there's a risk of an afternoon thundershower, but it is not going to be this prolonged heavy rain that we've had this last prior week.
And we can hope that the parts of northern Wisconsin and elsewhere in Wisconsin that haven't had the rain, maybe some will come.
Let's hope for a
good
winter.
They can have it. Yeah, they can have it.
we don't want it. They can have it. Thanks, guys. Our weather guys, Steve Ackerman, professor and director of the Cooperative Institute for Meteorological Satellite Studies at UW-Madison, John Martin, professor and chair of the Department of Atmospheric and Oceanic Sciences, as well from UW-Madison. They'll be back again, as they always are, the last Monday of every month to talk weather with you. Thank you very much for listening. Stay with us. Lots in store here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio.